Okay. Well, first of all, I appreciate you reaching out to us skeptics. Back in August when this whole thing started, from our point of view, we were thinking it's either an Xbox promotion, alternative reality game, April Fool's prank, but it's clear those scenarios, at least, have been sort of proven false. To date, we've seen that Storm is a real company, real employees, real offices, real investors. You kept your word and recruited a jury. You know, with a bit of digging, we've discovered one of the jurors. We've come a long way since August. Well, we think we've discovered one of them. We've come a long way since August. Other than showing us the goods, man, what can Storm do to convince skeptics of your intentions? With that in mind, some people, especially posting on the forums and posting on the blog, have said that by you reaching out and doing all this reaching out to the community, you're pretty much wasting your time. Do you have anything to say? Possibility that you've made a mistake, or do you not see that as a possibility?
At all on the premise that we're wrong about it. We really believe in what we say.
Okay, let's move on to some of the debate questions that some of the commenters on my blog have asked. First off, for clarification's sake, who initiated the UCD debate? You mentioned that the organizers of the debate had lied about something before the debate. Yeah, I actually have confirmation from the YouTube poster that someone in the department asked him to remove those videos. So, just for clarification, wasn't Storm that? Content of the presentation, we have a lot of questions for you regarding some of the statements you made. The first, during the debate, you mentioned four PhDs with backgrounds in magnetics work for Storn. How long have they worked for Storn?
Nine months ago. They're on the contract list.
So did they start working for you around the time of the jury announcement? Still under contract with Storm?
They're still under contract with Storm, yeah. They're under contract, I think, through the end of the year.
So they're not employees. Do any of them own shares in the company?
No.
Would any of them be willing to share their CVs with the Storm community?
I doubt it, to be honest. I mean, I think that and there's no disrespect to the Forum community, which I'm a vocal. I think you find most people just don't want to engage.
Sure. Okay. During the debate, is it correct that you mentioned that Cambridge was one of the universities Storm worked with?
What I said is that a professor from Cambridge had looked at the technology, not Cambridge University itself.
Okay, professor at college. Was that something new? Had you mentioned that before, or is that new information for the Storm community?
I can't say, to be honest, I mean, having said so much about something that's relatively simple, I can't really say whether I said it before publicly or not. I don't know. I mean, it's certainly not, I wouldn't consider it privileged information, because you could look at it that way. We're certainly not going to reveal who the professor was, with NDAs and all of that stuff.
is he or she still a professor at Cambridge?
I don't know. It's the right answer.
Okay.
I don't see why there wouldn't be much of them, but, you know, I haven't checked up with them recently, so I can't say one way or the other.
Sure, sure. One of your slides in the presentation, you showed that 96% dark matter slide.
Yep.
Can you go into detail about the relationship between dark matter and Storm's discovery?
There is no relationship. I mean, the point that we were trying to make. I mean, you know, a lot of people say that you know we haven't, you know, we really haven't, you know, discussed the technology in detail, and I think it's fair to say we certainly haven't discussed specific patentable configurations, and it's not something that we're known to do, and I'll explain the reasons for that if you want. But with respect to you know, the Bohr model of the atom and the galactic spin problem, all that we're trying to do there in that presentation is to get people to think about, you know, some of the bigger issues in physics, and you push Jorn aside for a minute, and you say, you know, the answer, the accepted answer within science to the galactic spin problem is that there's a lot more energy matter in the universe than we can detect. And you know, some people will say there are experiments to prove it, and you know, you can argue any set of experimental data backwards and forwards. But the point is that there are questions that are not resolved, and these are very large questions with respect to energy mass in the universe. I mean, these are huge questions with respect to energy mass in the universe that are unresolved. So simply to say that, you know, there is no evidence against COE isn't a fair statement. Okay, there is a very large question over energy mass in the universe, and you can't remove energy mass from, you know, conversation of conservation of energy.
Sure. Okay.
You know, with respect to you know, we're certainly not saying that the galactic spin problem is a demonstration of COE being wrong, but we are saying it's a demonstration that there are bigger questions to be asked in the world of science than Storm.
You're basically saying that scientists don't know everything yet, really.
I mean, any scientist will tell you that, and again, you know, a lot of people will probably listen to this and say, yeah, they're spoofing on about a relevant scientific issue, but you can't separate our claim from science quite so easily. The search for, you know, unified theories and all of this is a simple representation that we don't have all the answers. Now, you know, there is such a vast volume of evidence to support conservation of energy that, you know, people like us who do challenge it need to be put under the gun. No question about that. We need to put under the scientific gun. But we don't have all the answers. And I don't think any scientist, any credible scientist would say that, you know, we know everything in the universe. But in many ways, that's kind of an issue that's divorced from our claim. Our claim is very, very specific. We're saying these specific types of transactions are thermodynamically unaccountable. If something is thermodynamically unaccountable, it's a violation of conservation of energy. It really is a very, very simple matter.
Could you tell us more about Jerry O'Dwyer's visit a few years back and what purpose of his visit was?
We had at the very early stages of this, when we discovered something that we didn't understand at all, quite a few academics brushing in and out of our offices. And I can't give you the exact time of when Jerry visited, but it was in the old office, so that's at least, I think, 2.5 years ago, because we moved into the new office 2.5 years ago. So like anybody else, when we ran into a technical problem that we couldn't understand, we went to, you know, our contacts in universities and said, look, can you come in and have a look and, you know, show us where we made our mistake or whatever in this specific thing. So, you know, again, there was, you know, no spinning machine. What we had is a head set up that was producing some very anomalous results. We have Jerry and we have lots of professors in. I mean, the point that he raised, I think, is that, you know, when we were raising funds for this project last year, I think somebody contacted him. I mean, he's never been in since that day. I mean, I did have a joking bet with him of a euro at the time that we were pretty confident, even in the anomaly test, that we had something highly unusual.
Okay, well, thanks for clarifying that for us. In the debate,
I mean, the one thing I make absolutely clear that when he visited Jor, he wasn't representing any investor or anything like that at all. I mean, we're talking years and years ago here when he came into the field. And I think even as he said in his video, you know, it was last year that somebody asked him their opinion on it, and not the PK was on then.
Definitely, and you asked him to come early on just to try to see if they could help you understand what the anomalies were happening.
Yeah, I mean, we do that. I mean, you know, in any technology that we've developed, and we've developed quite a few of them, when we run into issues that are, you know, beyond the skill set that we would have had at the time, we would have contacted. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many engineers or professors we had in the early days, kind of get, you know, we're scratching our heads, staring into a screen, going, we can't, you know, we can't add this up. And Jerry came in during that period.
I see. So in the debate, you mentioned that the area of science related to magnetic viscosity was somewhat unexplored, and there are only.
I think what I actually said is I said poorly investigated. If you look at first of all, I have an issue with the term viscosity because a viscous reaction has a certain level of energy momentum in it. You know, you punch a fluid and your energy takes a period of time to dissipate. In what's termed a magnetic viscosity reaction, there is no energy momentum in it, and that's a very important point. So I do think the effect itself is slightly mislabeled, and I'm leaving things in common sense. You know, it's a term that's applied to probably several aspects in magnetics. With respect to how well it's understood, I mean, you can go through the white papers that are there since it was discovered and find lots of conflicting views on it. And you know, probably one of the strongest cases for it is the Barbier plot. And the Barbier plot itself is a phenomenological explanation of it. It's not truly a scientific explanation of it. Now, all of that sounds like waffle. The point about it is it's something that if somebody is interested in, they can actually go off, they can set up a reaction in their lab and they can measure it and you know, that they have the opportunity to pull the rug from under that and to come to it.
Also in the debate, you mentioned that just a few weeks ago you'd measured, was it 2,200 joules being extracted from magnets having 0.2 joules in them?
Yeah.
How long did that test run for?
We're constantly testing this thing for a variety of reasons. I mean, the reason that we're doing some of these tests at the moment is actually to provide some test examples into the FPGC. The point that I was making is that there are really research into viscosity, and ultimately the general scientific consensus at this point is that it's a repetition issue, that you know, these changes in potential energy and the flux and subsequently force are at the cost of the magnetic domains. And in fact, that's probably one of the simplest things that you can rule out, because you can calculate the domain energy of a known magnet. You can cycle it through a viscous reaction, a so-called viscous reaction, and you can measure the change in the main energy. And, you know, therefore, it's a relatively simple thing to decide whether or not the missing energy, if you want to term it that, is as a result of variations in the main energy. And we're saying that we test this thing over years, other people test it, absolutely nothing, no measurable variation in the main energy, and indeed any variation in the main energy is a huge order of magnitude in difference than the variation in energy that the effect causes.
Interesting. So those were pretty much the debate questions I have. I have a few radio show questions from your interview with Matt Cooper. You mentioned that it's, and I'll quote you, it's safe to say that if it didn't work, the jury would have delivered already. Can you go into more detail about that quote?
I think probably that isn't 100% fair quote for myself. I think that if the answer to the problem was a simple answer, as in, you know, a hidden battery or a dodgy test, that it would have been resolved by now. I think you have to look at the technology in two ways. One is whether or not it is a technology is whether it's a technology that truly violates a fundamental physical principle, i.e. conservation of energy. I think that if it was a mistake, an obvious mistake, it would clearly have been recognized by NEP. So we've never, you know, we've never felt that. But I do, the point I was trying to make badly was that if this was just a simple mistake, this would have been picked up by NEP, no question about it.
A lot of people have asked, after your jury update, a lot of people asked and wondered, do the jury members, have they even replicated the machine? I mean, how much digging have they been able to do, really, to even get to the point where they can say whether or not it would work or not?
It would work in which way? I mean,
are they looking just at test data, or do they have actual experimentation methods that they could implement in their own labs?
Well, I'm not going to go into lots of detail on the jury process, other than to say that the first part, which was the part that had been requested, and not dissimilar to what HK or any of these guys asked, was provision of a bunch of test data from ourselves and people who had done tests with us, and you know, they have reviewed that. Whether or not any of them have specifically replicated stuff in the lab, I don't know. I mean, we're pretty hands-off in the process. It's a fairly rigorous process. We don't sit there and, you know, phone up and say, how's it going in the lab today? But I think it's certainly, there would be no question at all that there would be no verdict in any way based on anything that we provide in ourselves. These guys are required to test this and so on and so on and so on, their own satisfaction
and independent. So during that first phase, you gave them test data from independent labs, you gave them test data from your own lab. Did you give them white papers on how the technology worked to the point where they could theoretically replicate it in their labs?
Absolutely, yes. Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, there were some, you know, cynical questions in the blog about that you wouldn't be willing to give that type of information out to the jury, and, I mean... enough to Storn that they could come and visit you without spending an enormous amount of money to get there, and have any of them visit Storn?
Well, first of all, I mean, obviously they will be visiting. They'll be visiting in the not too distant future. And I'm not going to go into their physical locations. They are, other than to say that they're in Europe and in the U.S., probably an equal split. But they certainly will be here, and they will be here in the relatively near future.
So no juror member has...
And we pay their travel costs, by the way, but it's not a question of travel costs.
Yeah, there was one comment that someone thought that the jury members had to pay you to participate, and I thought that was pretty funny. misinterpretation of the contract.
Yeah, well, I find it also not a banter, kind of entertaining. I mean, there's not a lot to say about that. I mean, the contract is up there. We pay their travel and living costs for them to come here, for them to go to other labs and so on, and we pay them what is really nominal fee for doing the work.
So just for clarification, no jury member has visited the Storm premise since...
I didn't say that, actually.
Okay.
And that would be a complete misrepresentation of it. What I said is I'm not going to go into who, when, and where.
Okay, that's why I'm asking for clarification, just to make sure.
No, I mean, just to understand, I mean, first of all, there is me, in a way, trying to be very protective of the people who are involved in this. Secondly, we still do get, you know, a bunch of bloggers turn up to the office every so often, and I'm certainly not going to say I'm going to be here next Tuesday and end up with a bunch of, you know, people hanging outside the office. And so I'm just, you know, the best comment I have is we're just say I'm just not going to say if they've been here or not. They will certainly be convening here as a group in the near term, but it is not fair to say that some of them haven't been convening here.
So speaking of crazy bloggers digging up information, as you know, we had the news that a juror member had accidentally left information on a website that implied that they might be in the jury. And since then, we've had a couple, you know, not complete confirmations, but some additional confirmations about that from the juror member himself, and also most recently in the radio show, you had a quote about jurors' information being leaked.
It's funny because I'm sure every cynic or believer or skeptic in a, you know, believes they do a lot of digging, but I can think of a few more names on the internet than the one that you're referring to. I'm just not going to comment on it.
Okay. So one thing I think that might, I don't know if this is possible, but that might help skeptics out is if there was and this can be an anonymous possibility, but if a representative of the jury were to, you know, at each phase of the jury process, make a statement basically from the jury members, is that
okay,
something
but,
that you consider?
Let's examine that. Okay, hey, it's anonymous. Okay, so the source is yours. So and I think there's a huge difference between skeptic and cynic. Okay, and I think that a large number of people are cynics. And secondly, you know, while the forums and so on are, you know, good fun and entertaining and stressful and all the things that go with them, they're really not actually that important to us as a business. I mean, we do try to engage them. We do enjoy them sometimes. We get frustrated with them sometimes. But we, as a business, don't act to serve them. Okay?
Sure.
We set out our agenda from day one, and our agenda from day one has been to say that our job is to deliver a credible scientific review of our claim. That's going on. And we're very protective of that process because we don't want the process in any way to be seen to be invalid. Now, lots of people will look at this and go, yeah, we selected them this way and that, this, you know, this, that, and the other, and so on. And our answer to that is pretty simple, is that, you know, we're not going to go into vast details on how we selected them. We're certainly not going to go into who's involved and in any kind of detail where they're at until the end of the process. And at the end of the process, everybody can see everything about the process.
So it's really a wait-and-see type of thing for skeptics and cynics. They just need to be patient and wait.
It's always been that.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, you know, there is, you know, all the, you know, and I keep seeing things, oh, this can be done in 40 hours and this, that, and the other. I mean, we're not in control of the process. Other than we set it up, there is a contract that governs the process. We have certain rights under the contract, and the people in the jury have certain rights under the contract. But the answer to the question, as frustrating as it is for everybody, and as much as people go, well, you know, this is taking too long and so on, is not going to be fast. And it's certainly not going to be driven by people's, you know, absolute desire to prove that we're a scam or we're a fraud or to prove we're right. It's a process.
Speaking of the, you know, the amount of time it takes the jurors to complete this task, do you have a feeling for how much time that they are able to dedicate? I mean, obviously they're full-time, you know, physicists doing their regular jobs. Do you have a...
Part of the selection criteria was availability. And, you know, while it wasn't an absolute key part, clearly it was a part of, you know, there was no point in us getting a bunch of jurors who couldn't start to do anything for 3 years. So one of the selection criteria, and it certainly wasn't the first one, or the most critical one, was the criteria of availability and some time to devote to the process. But equally, it is, you know, in some ways a relatively simple process in that, you know, we present our case. They have questions about test methods. had something to do. If we had 22 scientists who had nothing other than to do this, you have to question their capability to start with. These are, you know, people who have lots of other research going on, of course.
One of our more frequent posters keeps harping on the jury, and one of his comments or questions is, will Thorne ever provide a working device to the jury? And my question is more of a general question. I mean, could you imagine a jury validating your technology without repeating it themselves?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. This question has been asked, you know, multiple times and answered multiple times, and the answer is there's absolutely no way they would do that. Of course they wouldn't.
And that was my feeling, but I just wanted to address some of my commenters' questions.
No, feel free to ask anything you want.
Okay, this next one's a fun one. In your radio interview, you confirmed that, I'm sorry, you mentioned in the radio interview that in the debate, scientists have made threats of physical violence towards you. Are these the Homer Simpson scientists that you referred to in the radio show?
You have to distinguish between, and again, I'm a blogger myself, or I've become a blogger, okay, bloggers, and scientists. We have had an interesting, and in the world of science, you know, well, hundreds of thousands of people, okay, so this is not per se addressed against science, but there have been some very specific scientists who have issued threats of physical violence. Any of our partner organizations, Bojamin, our auditors, our PR company, get contacted to, you know, discuss why the hell they're involved with us and so on and so on. So, you know, that's certainly not representative of the scientific community as a whole, but there are certain credible scientists who find the very thought of us asking this question, and probably more specifically the way we ask this question, in need of a response, and their response is bizarre, to be honest. I just don't understand it. But it's there, it's real.
Do you take any of those threats seriously?
Not at all, no. It's certainly you know, you get a phone call or you get some irate person, you know, at the office, it certainly raises your blood temperature a few degrees for a few moments. Other than that, it's primarily laughable, you know.
Sure, okay. I just wanted to make sure that none of those were real serious threats that you had to alter any, you know, put in more security into your office or protect your family or anything like that.
I mean, our office is extremely secure. We've probably got one of the most secure buildings in Dublin, but that's nothing to do with this project. That's simply because an awful lot of the work we've done in the past involved handling this evidence. So the office is very secure anyway, and we're certainly not considering bodyguards or any of this kind of stuff in case of, you know, 8-year-old physicist comes at me with a pickaxe. I'll run.
Okay, you mentioned magnetic viscosity and S sub V as a factor in your free energy device. In the scientific literature, S sub V is defined as an irreversible energy loss in a permanent magnet.
It's got lots of definitions, and I think that, to be fair to Dr. Mike, he has picked the key element of it, which is one that we discussed ad infinitum in our old forum. And the point we're saying is domain alignment with respect to time.
The domain alignment in respect to time. So the claim that no degradation of materials is seen, that sort of seems at odds with S sub V, though, and magnetic viscosity.
Yeah, and this is why I'm saying that I consider the area poorly researched, because it's actually one of the simplest tests to do. The explanation, and I'm not sure that's a consensus explanation, but certainly in some of the literature that we've looked at, is this irreversible loss that, is that the result of domain energy. And we're saying, well, actually, that is so easy to test, and it's so easy to disprove, that I've just gobsmacked that some of the skeptics or cynics haven't tried to do it. And I'll say it now. Look, you want to put an end to this little John thing that you believe is some kind of fraud or a scam or something. Okay, produce a set of experimental data that demonstrates an irreversible loss in the domain due to domain alignment. That's it.
And it really
it's very easy to throw stones. It's very, very simple. But and I said it in the presentation at UCD, which is, look, you want to put an end to us. You have a really, really straightforward and obvious answer. Prove us wrong.
And it seems that Dr. Mike is he's definitely been engaged and is very interested in repeating these experiments that you've shared with him. Do you think he'll be able to publish on his results, or where do you think that might lead?
I don't see any reason that he couldn't publish his results. I mean, what I did say to him, and I hope I'm not betraying your confidence here, is that before you can even begin to look at domain losses and heat and all the other energies that are potentially involved, the first thing you have to do is have an effective experimental design that actually allows you to have an energy differential to SV. And that in itself is, in a way, a simple experiment, but is an experiment that, like any experiment, has lots of issues. So all I said to Mike was, I said, look, I provided you one of the many ways that we test this. It's probably the simplest way, but equally it's a very reliable way of doing it, and suggested that he replicate it. He may decide to test it a completely different way. But the point that I am making, was making, is that in order to, measure the effect of SV, first of all, you have to be able to measure SV, and that's the first port of call. Because if you can't measure the effect, you can't measure the effect of the effect, if you see what I mean.
Sure. I find it interesting that, you're basically telling the scientific community where to go test. Do you think this couldn't cause any issues with your IP or your patenting?
No, because you can't patent physical effect. Okay, you can't patent gravity. Okay, you can't patent magnetic viscosity. You cannot patent physical effect. Most people will look at viscosity as a loss mechanism. Say this is a great way to lose energy. It looks like reluctance. It looks like all these different things. But it isn't. There are configurations, and indeed one of the SPDC members appears already have cracked one of them, which allow a gain of energy. Okay, so it's not a lossy mechanism. And us, asking Dr. Mike or whatever, saying to anybody, go off and resolve an SV reaction has nothing at all to do with our technology, other than it is the effect upon which our technology is based. We can't patent a physical principle. We can certainly patent technology that harnesses it, in the same way you could patent, a parachute, and the use of air resistance. You can't actually patent air resistance, but you can certainly patent a technology that utilizes a physical effect.
Speaking of the SPDC member, that's pretty big news. Can you?
It's not actually. first of all, I have to say it's a simulated result. And it's coming from somebody who is probably rather skeptical of it. But I think the point about it is that it does. Everybody looks at viscosity, magnetic viscosity, which again I believe is a misnomer of a term, and sees it as a loss mechanism. And we're saying, well, actually the key intellectual property for us is actually how you harness it to make it a gain mechanism.
So is that SPD?
Again, there are two levels to the thing here. One is that the core thermodynamics, the core science issue, can be resolved without. Wondering whether it's a gain or a loss, or even if a gain is possible, because either the reaction is thermodynamically resolvable or it isn't. And that's why I don't accept this, this position of, we can't prove you wrong. Of course you can. Every reaction, every interaction can be thermodynamically analyzed, and you can either resolve it with conservation of energy, or you can't. So, yes, of course it can be proven wrong. It can be proven wrong with effective test and measurement, if it is wrong. With respect to harnessing that anomaly with thermodynamics, is the core technology. So there are really two separate issues going on here, yeah?
It's amazing that something that seems to be such a negative, and people try to work around this, you know, from designing motors and everything, ends up being the same phenomena that has created this phenomena that you're seeing.
That's why, you know, you have to be somewhere. When we started this project, we knew, you know, nothing more than your average well-trained engineer did about magnetics. I'd never heard of viscosity, nobody never heard of viscosity here. And in many ways, probably if we had heard of it, we would have written off the original anomaly immediately. Well, that's just a viscous reaction. But so little did we know about viscosity that we decided to test it to the extreme. And I would suggest, other than lots of very interesting formulas that are out there, I genuinely suggest that you know, as with any effect, it can be tested at a phenomenological level. You can test it, and you can see, you know, you can see the truth behind it. So, I'm certainly not going to be going off and saying, you know, here's how you configure this for a gain or any of this kind of stuff. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why I'm not going to do that. But if you're a qualified and capable skeptic or cynic, you know, pull them up from under our feet. Have them produce a set of test data that thermodynamically resolves an SC interaction. That's the end of the story.
It seems like such a simple thing, but when you really get down to it, it's not a simple. It's not like, especially myself, I don't have a physics background. I can't just go out, buy the equipment and figure this out on my own. I need to refer to an expert. So speaking of that SPDC,
can I say something on that? I mean, I think if for a moment you lived this Jordan dream, you said, oh my God, there is a violation of conservation of energy, it actually needs, it almost by definition has to be something pretty fundamental, yeah?
Oh.
And so that when people look at our claim, okay, that for us this is such a fundamental issue from the perspective of its raw simplicity, which is the simple fact that the total energy exchange of a ferromagnetic interaction varies with respect to the time frame that it's conducted in. Simple. It's quite easy to prove that wrong.
And that simply breaks our current known laws, which makes this all very, very challenging for you. I mean, very challenging for us to accept, and very, not necessarily challenging for you to prove, but challenging you. For you to keep it intellectually secret and prove at the same time.
As an awful lot of the reaction of what I should say the believers is, you know, or indeed the detractors is waiting for the moment to say, I told you so. You know, I told you that it wasn't real, or I told you it was real. It's such a complete irrelevance because, you know, once this is validated, the real battle starts. And the real battle is actually a commercial battle. It's actually how do you get something like this into market, how do we drive revenues and so on. So, you know, there'll be no looking back from, you know, in Jordan of going, aha, I told you so. You know, this is the smallest battle we have to face. It's the fundamental one. We have to fight our battles one at a time. And this battle is simply a battle of trying to get credible scientific validation and trying to convince a significant proportion of the engineering and general populace that it is real. We won't convince everybody. We haven't set out to convince everybody.
Speaking of that SPDC member that has simulated some interesting results, is he or she one of the lucky seven that have been mentioned earlier on before?
No.
Oh, actually not one of the lucky seven. Now, out of those lucky seven, have any of those been?
The unfortunate seven.
The unfortunate seven. Sorry, I'll refer to them as the unfortunate seven from now on. Have any of them been able to make forward progress with your invention?
First of all, we're in the process of them, and again, I go back to what I was saying about the Dr. Mike thing, is that the first thing that we need to do is to be able to measure the reaction. Particularly if you can't measure it, you can't A, thermodynamically resolve it, and B, harness it. So I think there are not actually seven actively working on at the moment. There would be four actively working on it. Three of them have measured it. One of them has moved on to domain testing and has concluded that, and one of them thinks that they do have a net gain of energy. But to be honest, I haven't looked at it in detail at this point.
Are there test setups not sophisticated enough to feed that energy back in? I mean, a lot of folks have said if you just see the thing running for a certain period of time, you're pretty convinced that this thing is real versus a domain loss, that type of issue. Have any of them been able to do that?
No, because to understand the difference between being able to measure an effect and configuring gain is a big difference. Yeah? Configuring gain actually does require some complex engineering, simply because it comes down to very specific types of field shapes and so on. So, you know, building devices and so on is conceptually actually very, very simple, but is a, you know, very significant engineering challenge.
So do you expect any member of the SBDC to be able to build one of those machines without your without your patent details or your publications?
I don't think our patent details would per se help them build a specific construction because our patents are pretty broad. I certainly expect them to build their own devices, but I think they'll be built with a lot of engineering support from ourselves.
I see.
I mean, we didn't start off the replication from the point of view of not having people replicate. But from my perspective, there's a certain engineering skill effort required to do this. And so in many ways, the phase we're at with some of them have gone, beyond the phase, is really weak from chaff. We're saying that you can't construct a system that can measure this interaction. You really aren't going to go any further.
I mean, from what I've seen, a lot of the SBDC members are people like me. They don't have a background in physics. Do you think many of them will be able to get to that point?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, the SBDC membership is pretty mixed. There are some, real heavyweight physicists in there. There's some really good engineers in there. There's some great hobbyists. And there's people with very little background in physics. So it's quite a diverse selection of people, and that was purposeful on our part, is in that we wanted, because the purpose of the SPDC isn't actually to get the 200-300 members in there at the moment, building little spinning machines. It's really to teach Sean how to impart this knowledge in an effective manner. So, from top-range PhD guys down to hobbyists, we have to package the information in a way that is understood by as many people as possible. And I'm sure there are members in there who will never get it all. But again, we're trying to find a way to describe how to go about the further development of the technology in a way that has as broad a possible appeal to people. By definition and by purpose, it's a very mixed group. And, we can see that in the learning modules that we post up and the experimental data we post up. We're doing, for example, now video experiments where we're showing people, some videos of, how do you, pull together the equipment and so on to do a specific type of test. And we're trying to find the balance between inherent knowledge that an engineer would have that obviously we have, and trying to say, at what level do we really have to describe what a thermocouple is, so on. So it's a long and arduous process, to be honest, and but its purpose is to help us find a way to describe this so that once it is validated, your normal engineering company, your normal tech company can come in and get straight up to speed.
It's definitely a unique approach. I've worked with.
It's
a unique approach to do a non-exclusive license to the world in the way Storm's going about this. I mean, can you name another company that's used this approach before?
Well, if you look at the Oscar Car Project, which is an online collaboration to develop a car, if you look at the open source model. In many ways, it's really, it's not something we invented, this type of model. What's important to us is widespread adoption. And so, we're a small company. We can't go off and post-validation try to sell this to 100,000 companies, but we do want 100,000 companies developing around it. develop a delivery mechanism that is realistic for who we are, which is not a company with, you know, a sales guy in every country or a sales guy in any country, probably. We have to find a model that suited the reality of who Sean is and the reality of our ambitions, which is our ambitions are pretty big, and it's widespread deployment.
So you're taking certain aspects of the open source movement and concepts, but applying them to more of a proprietary licensing model approach? So
yep,
combining
exactly.
Those two?
Exactly. I mean, the open source concepts in the terms of community development, you know, the ability to impart an understanding of the capability of the technology, how it's further developed, how it can be applied to certain things, and so on, because our customers for this technology, you know, are not actually you and I. Our customers for this technology are companies that will further develop the technology and place it in their own products. So we need to understand that our ultimate customer here, that, you know, following validation, is going to be a development company that wants to develop a new mobile phone or whatever it may be. Okay, and that we have to find a way to deliver the technical content to them in such a way that they can refine the core technology to suit their product.
It's definitely a fascinating and internet-based business model, and I think you are definitely innovating with the business model in and of itself versus the whole free energy aspect of it. So very, very interesting.
I mean, the reality of something like this is that you have to try and break the mold or the perceived mold in as many ways as possible. Because, you know, the other option for us, and there's lots of reasons why, other than just the scale of the company and the ability to support only so much engineering effort of partners, there are the issues about what your business ambitions are. Classically, people who, if you thought this stuff was possible, if you had this, you would expect to go to the 90-pound gorilla of a company, do a license deal with them, and move on with your life. But our ambitions are slightly broader than that, in that we actually want to see some genuine competition in the market. We want, you know, a real target market for this aren't the, you know, huge corporations. They're the SMEs, the innovators, because people who will get this technology fastest to market are going to be small, aggressive tech development companies, and we will be very focused on trying to get them interested, engaged in developing products.
So, as you know, one of the commenters on my blog likes to dig into your financials history. He's basically trying to understand how the company is funded and who owns it, those types of questions.
But the ownership and how it's funded is on the public record, so I don't see an awful lot of digging there. You know, downloaded from the CRO.
There are questions. Like who the Patmore Group is, you know, who are these people funding you, and are they willing to discuss this at all, or are they secretive? Those types of questions are asked. And do you have?
Well, again, this is a question of perspective. Okay, 99% of the general population really have no interest in internet forums. I would have been counted well on 99% before we made our decision to stick a forum on our internet site. So certainly a lot of the shareholders have been interviewed for the documentary, which is, you know, more for the general populace. I firstly tend to come in and you know, chat their motivational reasons or their lives or anything like that to you know, probably an audience of no more than 200 or 300 people who are at the outer edges of their views on Sean.
Could you talk a little, I mean, you don't have to talk about specifics with the investors, but could you talk about their due diligence, like how they validated the technology to decide to invest millions of dollars in the Storm?
First of all, I mean, I can't, you know, say, you know, specifically, you know, what a, you know, what one person may have done over the other, but I can say what the company did. There are pretty stringent POS regulations relating to the raising of funds in Ireland, and they place certain legal requirements on an organisation that's trying to raise funds. We took a very rigorous view of it, that we would actually in preparing our case for investment actually be measured by the highest yard. So we developed a investment memorandum that was subjected to a complete review by a leading UK law firm. That review involved every statement in it that was perceived to be a statement of fact, like I am Sean McGarvey, ex-university, has tested and validated this. They have to go off and research and confirm that each of these statements were true in any statement that was respect to fact, and any statement that was forward-looking, as in we expect to have revenues of X and Y, are clearly marked as forward-looking. So the documentation provided was provided in a way that every single item that we stated in that has been confirmed as a statement of fact.
So that's interesting. So those investors were able to, or you had a third party confirm with those third party scientists that validated your technology before any money was invested in the storm.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what would you do? You know, 100%. I mean, and that's, and again, obviously, you know, they've been into the office, and, you know, so on and so on. But you know, I can't, for example, say for every you know, that every investor, you know, did this or did that, but certainly in terms of what we did, it was well beyond the fairly rigorous legal requirements, to the point that we, you know, when we developed our investment documents, that every single statement in there was validated by a completely independent a legal firm we don't use on a day-to-day basis, that every single statement was validated, including, you know, simple stuff like, you know, I am Sean McGarvey, okay, to provide bunches of documents just to prove that I have a degree in engineering. You know, from the simplest statement to the wildest statement that we have, you know, had it validated by X, Y, and Z.
You're definitely, you've entered a field of where the past has been tainted by certain scam artists and other people who have raised money without a real device, and so you definitely have to take that extra step in your situation.
But we do that with I mean, that's, in many ways, that's not a question of the claim. We prior to this work with a lot of small companies, helping them. You know, we even did a lot of technical due diligence on behalf of investors on other companies. And it's just a simple case that when you're dealing with people's money, you have to be very careful about it. Because ultimately, nobody can guarantee the business success or failure of an organization. I mean, you can't, you know, something happens, a newer technology comes in, whatever technology you're developing. But certainly in terms of what you state to people, people should be very clear on what is a validated fact and what is a forward-looking statement. And we take that very, very seriously. And we always have, and we advise anybody who worked in the past to take it very seriously. And there are laws of government. I mean, there are regulations of government. And we decided to go to the ultimate extreme of doing that, probably to an extent driven by the nature of the climate. The climate is so preposterous.
Yeah, I mean, there was a thread on the forum that discussed what would happen to Storn if this was shown to be a con or a scam, and that basically, I mean, some of the things that have happened, you pretty much go to jail, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've no question at all that if it's a fraud, I'll end up in jail. But it's not a fraud. I mean, you know, I'd have to think about that. I would spend a large proportion of my career involved in helping police organizations fight fraud. I know what a fraud is. But this is not a fraud. So, sure, I mean, if it is a fraud, I've no doubt I'll be cuffed and led away. But it can happen to the nature of fraud, you know.
You stated that Thorne stated that you're not going to take in additional funding until the jury reaches a verdict. And this has been, I know you've repeated this a lot in the forums, but can you just repeat it to us again?
We will not raise an additional fund from the time that August the 18th, let's be absolutely specific, which is the day we made the challenge public until the jury deliver.
So
we won't commercialize it anyway. We won't sell T-shirts. We won't charge entrance into this demo. We're not going to take any piece of money in any format.
So I won't be able to buy the Storm book until the jury proceeds.
Whatever way it is, I'm sure it'll be an interesting book. whoever's writing it, we won't receive a cent of it anyway. I don't know how more. And I know people will listen to this. But he didn't say this. He didn't say that. Okay. No mechanism at all of raising money until the or taking revenue or any of us personally making money or whatever you want, whatever way you want to cast it until the jury deliver. If I've missed something, I don't know what to say.
Many of the skeptics have expressed their doubts about whether the July demo will even happen. And I think something that fed that was the fact that you're not willing to publish the demo dates, and you have your reasons for doing that. But is there anything else you can share with us about the July demos, like your progress on building the prototypes or anything that might quell some of the skepticism?
I think it's going to be great fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I expect a complete entrenchment of views. I expect that those people who believe us will go, there you go. I expect those people who don't believe us will go, well, clearly now we've entered the realm of fraud because the machine could never do that. And I think it will change very little to hardened forum members. But again, the audience isn't per se the forum. I mean, the forum is not, as your forum, our forum, any other forum, is not a representative view of our audience. In fact, it doesn't represent our target audience at all. What will it achieve? It will achieve some profile for us, where and the profile is primarily directed at us discussing in more detail how we intend to distribute the technology, not per se the technology itself. And if you're a skeptic, you may rise in the eyebrow. If you're a cynic, it's absolute proof of a con then, because there must be some way that the technology is rigged, and if you're a believer, you get, well, there, I told you something. So it'll make no difference at all to forum members. Just give them something to argue about. They're pretty good at that to start with.
From my perspective, trying to understand your model and your approach to this, the jury process is really the key and the focus. In the jury process, you've mentioned you don't have control over when they'll deliver, but you're guessing at the end of this year, early next year. And the July demo...
That's
a pure guesstimate. What's going to happen... I mean, after you show the public a working demo, and let's say most of the public believes you and thinks this is real, I mean, what are you going to do for the next 6 months? And are you going to get your doors beaten down even more so than you already have with the public...
We probably will, but we're not going to do anything different. I mean, in a way, you have to see the validation in a slightly wider context than just the opinion of the jury. It is an erosion of disbelief, and it's not just technical disbelief. It's that, well, you may be quite happy to have drawn a conclusion that we're not an Xbox marketing stunt, okay? Probably the endearing impression of the wider population is, oh yeah, we're the ARG or something like that, and so that we have decided that we need to do certain public things that are really more about validating that we are a real company, we're still here, we're still what we're saying we're about, and because the validation itself is the technical validation is part of a process of erosion of disbelief in what is the business. And I know that sounds terribly weird saying, but it's not erosion of a belief as us as a business, but we are a genuine business, and that we need to attack skepticism in every form. But remembering again, and people need to keep context of this, is that the forums that relate to Sjorn do not represent in any way public view. As I said before, they will attract diverse polls. The general populace are not members of the forum. The general populace is one of the audience that we need to convince. And in many ways, the stuff that happens on your forum, all of the, the crazy ideas that relate to us, do us a service. Because, if you look through the history of your forum, and I was reading it yesterday, there is years that, you know, that have come up and people have investigated this and that and the other. And they all die because none of them are real. So, you know, that is an important reference point for if a journalist really wants to do a genuine in-depth investigation into it. Of course, they're going to Google it, they're going to go through it, but what they'll see is different than what you do. Because you're in the forum every day, and I'm in my forum every day, and we're reading the latest news. It really is a track record of failure to prove us as a fraud. And so it doesn't deserve.
Well, I mean, the reason why there's a failure to prove you as a fraud is there's more, I mean, the more data that's released by you and by leaks and so on and so forth, I mean, we're all scientists in a way. We're all trying to model the data. You know, we're trying to figure out what is going on because most of us skeptics, you know, still believe in the conservation of energy. So
as you should, I mean, you have to understand, I've never argued with that, and there is a compelling logic to some of the cries of fraud, is that the probability of us being right about conservation of energy is so remote, okay? And the probability of us having made a mistake, having spent this much time and effort and money and so on into investigating it, is pretty remote. And so there is this beautiful, compelling logic to the fraud argument, QED, the only rational explanation is a fraud. And I understand it. It's just wrong.
And I really do hope that you prove us wrong, but
I'm not trying to prove you wrong.
Well, I mean, the jury members...
I'm trying to get effect policy into the market.
Sure. No,
yeah,
I agree.
I'm certainly not going to appear in your forum one day, when this is all over, and go, this is such a small battle compared to the real battle that we face. And the real battle is going to be one that is highly litigious for people doing it left, right, and centre from, claiming to infringe their patents, and we've designed this thing to fight the battle one at a time. Why don't we publish detailed information about the construction of the device? And I can tell you one, that every week we get a letter from somebody claiming violation of their patent, and we say, well, we haven't, A, our patents aren't in the public domain, B, we haven't published any details on the configuration of our system, so you have nothing and infringement. That's the fight that we will need to face after the validation when, the full details of any of the crop gains and this, that, and the other. We really have to be, such a small company, have to be careful in the timing. We can't fight all these battles at the same time.
So, the forum isn't as important as the general public. And yet, you do spend a decent amount of time participating with us, and I'm sure we all appreciate that. What's your normal day like? What do you usually do with your time?
Nothing about my day is normal. we have a huge amount going on. No question about that. And there are long periods of time where I just don't have any time to go into the forum. I spend most of my time in the forum when I'm at home, I'm on the road, or late at night. I do go in there every so often during the day because I enjoy it. I mean, I actually 99.9% of it is actually I find incredibly good entertainment. We are humans. I mean, when people say things about you, despite the fact you probably don't want to hear half, you kind of feel that you have to anyway. But it's not. To say it's unimportant wouldn't be fair either. But to say it has any huge significance, I think is overstating it as well. It is something that we put in. A lot of people said to me, why don't we just shut this thing down? I mean, what purpose does it serve? But in a way, it does serve, as I said, some purpose. And if somebody wants to really investigate it, they can dig through, the history of the changing opinions of what we are and all of the fraud theories that, ultimately, whether proven wrong or not, it becomes more and more preposterous as time goes on. It's there. I enjoy it. It's not a massively significant thing to us, but I think it's not particularly relevant. I wouldn't claim that at all.
But back to the original question.
I have a ban button, so I really enjoy it.
Fan club, that's it. So back back to the original question. What do you do during your day? I mean, what kind of activities does the CEO of a free energy company?
What do all the people in your office do every day? I mean,
well, no, more you.
Our focus is twofold. Obviously, we do have to service the jury to do that. We are looking at the legal structuring of the company. We're looking changing the type of structure of the company to protect ourselves and to protect the core intellectual property against lawsuits that will happen in the future. We're developing delivery mechanisms, which is a massive job, which is, you know, how do we get enough information, background knowledge, and knowledge specific about our technology for people to be able to replicate this. You know, even the logistics of the London thing are huge. So, I mean, we are incredibly busy at every level, and we continue to further refine and so on the technology. You know, we're developing, you know, we're co-developing a product for launch, probably taking on more than we should as a company of 20-odd people. So we're incredibly busy.
Well, Sean, thank you for the time for this interview. I want to leave it open if you have any other comments you want to say towards our skeptical community over at Free Energy Tracker. If you had any closing remarks you'd like to make, I really appreciate though this interview, and I think you've really addressed a lot of the questions from our community. So,
said in the past, I mean, you know, I'm more than happy to discuss it. I like discussing it. So, if you want to do this again, I'm sure that out of this there'll be, you know, several new thought theories and so on. And if you want to discuss the reaction to this, I'm always there.
Wonderful. And I definitely will be taking you up on that.
Can I just say one thing on this dual tracker, free energy tracker, that it certainly was never an attempt by us to shut you guys down. It is simply, and again, anybody who looks at this, is that when you register a trademark, the strength of your trademark really comes down to, in terms of future protection of the trademark, what did we do as a company to protect it in the beginning?
My reasoning for moving so quickly on the name change was due to my research and my conversations with a lawyer on that same exact issue. So I completely understand your copyright issues, your trademark issues, and I hope you feel that we've respected those.
Absolutely. I mean, I have, and equally, you know, I don't spend an awful lot of time in there because I'll probably brain my blood temperature a bit, which is somewhat, well, you'll probably end up having a heart attack. You know, enjoy it, and as I said, if there are further follow-up questions, I'm sure there will be, you know, there'll be people that what you didn't have to do, if you didn't have to do that, bang away, I'm quite happy to do this again.
Okay, wonderful, Sean, and I'll definitely take you up on that offer, and it's been a great interview. Thank you very much.
Okay, cheers, Will. Have a good one.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.